Well, hi everyone. Don't talk too much this way. Okay. My name's Bob Cook, this is an event called Finding the Village Square. I'm going to start by doing a little introduction of the event and then talk a little bit about the Civic Center, and then we can start walking. So this is my intro. The relation between what we see and what we know is never settled. This is a quote from Peter Berger, Ways of Seeing. It is visually puzzling that the city of Urbana does not have the feature that's commonly known as the village square. A village square is a space at or near a city center that marks an edge between the public and private. Public space, or a commons, is situated at the heart of the bustling activity of a town's commercial district. Typically in the Midwest, this urban form is described by a square-ish civic building placed at the center of a green space, which is surrounded on all four sides by commercial buildings and sometimes other public buildings. Importantly, the buildings on all four sides face in towards the commons. Symbolically, then, this feature, this urban form, represents an idealized society and the relationships between its constituent building blocks. You have government in the center of a publicly owned, i.e. democratic, space. Private business on the edges of this space, and notably not in its center. And people as active agents who are freely moving between the edge of the private to the center of the public and back. So it's always struck me that strange that Urbana seems to lack such a village square, given that it was the first white settlement in the area, and so it was going to be the town that people came to have public time. It's the county seat, so that would indicate that there's some civic reason for putting a building in the center of town. And it was built during a time when American cities were obsessed, basically, with the grid pattern of city design. And a village square was a sort of key feature of that pattern. So what is Urbana's story? Why is this feature so conspicuously absent? Or if it existed, what happened to it? And when I answer these questions, I don't simply want to take the perspective of an idle historical observer. What happened, on what dates, what property changed hands, when. And it's interesting, going through the archives in the Urbana Free Library, the history of Urbana sort of reads as a series of property exchanges. It's kind of who gave what to who when. Instead, I'm interested in these questions of what happened to the village square in order to open up spaces that we see around us every day to questions of politics and questions of design. I would like to read these questions through two lenses. The lens of politics, where the political forces, or what were the political forces that shaped the public space in downtown Urbana, and the lens of a designer. How can we read the historical landscape, both the physical and the political landscape, in order to understand the forces that have shaped us to the present moment? And what questions can we ask in order to design the future of space, and especially public space, in downtown Urbana? So what will we be doing? Okay, so basically, this is supposed to be a multifunctional event. It functions a little bit as a report on what downtown space is like. It's functioning as a tour, guided tour. I'm sort of acting as your tour guide a little bit. But I've also invited people who have some knowledge and expertise of various aspects of downtown Urbana. Genevieve Borich from Civitas, and I'll let you sort of explain what Civitas is.
Civitas is a University of Illinois community design center. We're located in downtown Urbana on Main Street. And we're starting this summer with a series of events. We are trying to educate people about citizenship, the public realm, community design, all these factors, and how they shape the idea of community. So there's just going to be a lot of different types of events this summer and in the fall and spring. But in the fall, we're going to have students working in the space as sort of a pseudo firm, I guess, in a way, for students to do internship projects on community outreach projects, that sort of thing. So it'll be quite fascinating for people to walk by the storefront, see people working on community projects, come in, be able to learn through exhibits and events about the idea of community, that sort of thing.
Thanks, Genevieve. And then Danielle Chenoweth, who's from the Urbana City Council.
And trying to convince Civitas to serve coffee in the morning so that I can come across the street and get a cup of coffee. Yeah, I'm Danielle Chenoweth. I serve Ward 4, which is a neighborhood very close to the downtown, within walking distance of downtown, on Urbana City Council.
And we have other members of the public here. George Carlisle, who has lived in Urbana all your life?
Just about, pretty close. So about 54 years. I was away at school a couple of years, Blackburn College, 1968-70. As I'm saying, where this Urbana Civic Center is now, one time the Interurban Illinois Terminal Railroad had their power plant to generate the electricity for the interurban cars. And the Illinois Terminal Historical Society calendar, I think it was last year's edition or the year before, had a picture taken facing west and east Main Street about in front of what's now the jail back then. It was an A&P supermarket, and showed an electric locomotive switching a car. The track went down the middle of Main Street, and then it had a switch siding coming down here Walnut Street to serve the power plant. I think it was taken fairly early in the morning, shortly after dawn, because the train, by the old timetable, I've gotten a few timetables and times during swap meets that they used to run a freight train at night on the track.
So you say this used to be a power plant, is what you're saying?
In this spot, of course, that it was torn down and this building was built. And one of the fundraising efforts for this particular building was a dollar a signature in the banks and other places to list that. So people paid their dollar sign their names on a sheet of paper, and it was placed in a time capsule. When this building built, I don't know just when that time capsule was supposed to be open, but I remember I did that, and I think some of the kids. Its predecessor, the old Urbana Civic Buildings, once I think a USO club or something during the war. It was where the west half of the parking deck is, beside the old fire station. The old city building, whose pictures are in there. There's a photograph close to the present city building here at the city council chambers. And building had the Tigers in a place for the high school kids to get together Friday night. The late Oscar Adams was supervising one of the high school gym was named for. And I think some of them had a fundraising event towards this civic center.
Okay, so today while we're walking, basically our methodology is going to be to observe, hopefully without, if we can, try to differentiate between observation and kind of critical judgments and assessments of the situation. Right. Okay, so we'll get both, but and then asking questions about the spaces that we're seeing, and then also finally sort of moving towards discussing possibilities for downtown Urbana. The route of the walking tour is going to start here, and then we're going to walk up Walnut Street to Main Street. And then walk over to the intersection of Broadway and Main, walk down to Elm Street, and then walk over to Vine Street. Now, normally what we would be trying to do is make a village square, the place of the old village square is where the county courthouse is. And we would, normally we would have just come back down Walnut Street and that would have been the tour, but we can't do that because Walnut Street has been completely taken over at this point by the sort of explosion outward of the courthouse to the east. So we're going to walk down to Vine Street instead and then turn south on Vine and walk past the current city building and then over towards the archway to the farmer's market. And that's sort of going to be trying to make another village square in the back there, but it's kind of screwed up because of Lincoln Square and the parking situation there. So we're trying to make a village square in our walking tour, and I think we're going to fail. But in many ways, we're going to hopefully generate some ideas on what could be in this space. So when we're looking around, just take note of a couple of criteria when you're looking at things. Be looking for patterns in location, okay? And patterns in location is where you see something, where it's placed in relation to the things around it, as well as where on the site it is placed. Patterns in scale, okay, so we're looking at the scale of one building in relation to another building, or one street in relation to another street, and so on. And then patterns of mix, which is where you're looking at what functions are these spaces that we're looking at serving, and what are the sort of mix of functions that either is there or isn't there, conspicuously absent, but could be there. And then patterns in time, are there ways to make these spaces serve more patterns or more functions throughout one day cycle, throughout a week cycle, throughout a year cycle? And finally, patterns in movement. How do the placement of certain buildings or features currently affect the ways that we move through the space? So, I'm not an expert in any of these particular sort of ways of seeing, but I have, done some research and I've looked at certain things. So why don't we start here with looking at the Civic Center. The Civic Center was built in the late 60s, and it was sort of co-funded by the federal government. They provided some of the materials for the building. And originally, the design of the Civic Center was supposed to be a much larger building. It was supposed to go all the way up to the edge of Broadway and contain stadium seating, a gymnasium, and a swimming pool. And now what we actually got, and that was going to be a $2.5 million project, what we actually got was a $200,000 project, a factor of 10 less. And it's basically four rooms with dividers so you can open it up into one big room or two big rooms or four small rooms.
And
no, I didn't. I actually didn't find out why they. I mean, I think it was just a matter. They had trouble raising the $200,000, but they were really excited about it. And Stanley Weaver was mayor at the time, and there's a picture of him in the archives shoveling a pile of dirt out taking the first shovel of the groundbreaking. So currently this space is rented to organizations such as auctions, the fire department, youth groups, yoga, Cheer America, which is a cheerleader competition, a magician,
Patch Adams,
and a local preacher apparently by the name of Arlie Neville, who offers bologna sandwiches to hungry folks and who preaches like Elvis.
And I gotta be there for that one. What day is that?
I don't know. So when I spoke to the attendant, he actually he made a distinction, which I find useful in this, is that he said this isn't really a community center. This is a civic center, and I don't know the distinction language-wise, but as a community center, what he was thinking of is a space that's used around the clock, by not-for-profit organizations and so on. This is really just a space that can be rented out for individual events. So I don't know if anyone here has comments about what the Civic Center could be or what you notice. I mean, I was going to move the tour to thinking about this street that the Civic Center is on.
I can mention one thing, which is we've talked a lot on council or in the city about the Civic Center, and I think there's somewhat of a consensus that it's not serving the purpose that we would like to see it serve, and that perhaps that's partly we could, this is nothing that, you know, has come before council, but we've thought about selling the Civic Center to fund a larger project that is more of a center or a square, you know, that's more centrally located than the Civic Center, opening up this property for some economic development in the area, maybe then, you know, reinvesting that. And I think it would be a shame to lose a public space because there are so few of them. And so I would only support something like that if we had a plan for where we were going to reinvest, and we reinvested as soon as we had sold the space, we reinvested. But we, you know, there's more of a possibility as we walk to anchoring something more in the central part of town.
I think of them, that would be, if like the plans I had about Lincoln Square, particularly the Warner Bergner space and, you know, theater, convention center, just a case of sell, if you did have to sell this to raise money to do that type of renovation, that might make sense. But I've always thought this building is really quite underused. There could be a lot more go on here than it does. And I want one event that you didn't mention. The last Wednesday in March, the Lions Club has a pancake meal most of the day in here.
The Lions Club are one of the main sponsors of the Civic Center.
Yeah,
when it's built.
So and a WFT has a record sale in here this fall too.
Actually, if we lost the space, I think we would see immediately what we had lost, because I think that there aren't a lot of spaces where people can just rent the space at a very affordable rate. It's something, you know, it's in the $100. It's not like renting a ballroom in any of the hotels in town. It would be much more expensive than that. But people also use the library auditorium. And when we recently renovated the library and had to close the auditorium, we heard all kinds of things about how people just didn't have any space to meet now that the auditorium had been temporarily closed. So it's interesting. We say it's underused, but it's also important for us to kind of look on the map and make sure that there are places that people can have pancake breakfast that shouldn't be underestimated in terms of the importance that kind of function serves.
Yeah, it's interesting when you think about the idea of public-private space, you know, and how there are some private spaces like inside Lincoln Square Mall that are privately owned, but there are community public events that happen there. You know, but there also needs to be a need where it's just not solely relying on public space. The community, the government is providing indoor space where these groups can congregate, even though it's not community and you don't have people just sitting around inside. It's still a need that the government, it helps the community.
We all have to remember that Lincoln Square Mall is a private space, and people forget that. And you don't have free speech rights in Lincoln Square Mall. You don't have free speech rights. You do have free speech rights in the Civic Center. You do have free speech rights in the library. And so some folks have talked about, well, why doesn't the city partner with Lincoln Square Mall and make a center there? I don't want that. If it's going to be public, it's public. If it's private, it's private. And we can partner to do economic development there, or the city could purchase the space, which we actually tried to do before the current owner, but we were outbid for it, and do something that way. But it's important for folks to know that a place like Lincoln Square Mall is no substitute for a public space. So, for example, when the anti-war carolers were getting ready to do Christmas caroling with anti-war things, and they were practicing in Lincoln Square Mall because I think it was 10 below outside, they were kicked out by the mall management because they were considered protesting. Well, that's not something that would happen in the Civic Center or in one of the public spaces, or it's less likely to happen and you have more rights and recourse if it does.
Well, it seems as though the original plan here was for a much more intensive, community-oriented place where kids could come after school and take classes or swim. When I was growing up in my small town, we had a community center, and it was busy every day of the week, morning to night. Ballet classes went on, art classes went on, and it brought together a real diverse group of people who ordinarily might not have met one another even though they were living in a small town, because it was, frankly, a rather segregated town. But the community center brought people together for a variety of activities, and it was very valuable for me as a child growing up to know that this place was there. You could go swimming, you could go learn tennis, you could go, I learned baton twirling there. And they had an auditorium and they were able to put on plays. And so the local little theater had a place to rent to put on a play inexpensively and bring people together.
Well, one of the things, moving a little bit our direction of focus visually from the Civic Center building itself to the street, has always struck me, and I've lived in Urbana since 1996, what struck me about Water Street is that it's so dead. I mean, there's nothing on the street. I mean, practically the only windows that look out on the street are the windows from the prison, and those aren't really windows.
Think about the monumentality of a downtown space and what the monumentality means to the city's identity, the community's identity. And the Civic Center being, you know, right behind us.
Can you explain monumentality?
Meaning it's the epicenter of the community. You know, people know, you think about the public square and that's sort of where you go. You know, it's where it's at. It's the local place where people put sculptures and congregate and things like that. And it doesn't necessarily need to be a square, a physical open space. But it's the facing of buildings and the placing things in relationship to each other that can also create that idea, that concept. And if you look behind us, the Civic Center is directly on axis with the courthouse, but you're in between looking at the back of buildings, which totally negates in a way that concept that's trying to happen. I mean, you think about the post office and the library, those are on axis. They were built by the same architect and there's actually a relationship between the two. There could be a relationship here, but you've got an underground parking garage. But you have to also remember how people walk through this space. Even though it's dead, it's a very good conduit for people to walk from Schnucks to buy groceries and walk to wherever they live west of there. It's a really great sidewalk because there's sort of enclosure with the tree canopy. You've got really nice pavers. You've got the street lights on the side. I wouldn't mind walking down the street myself, and it's a nice quiet street so pedestrians don't feel as, you know, threatened by cars racing by them, but at the same time, it's got a very weird atmosphere with the backs of the buildings.
Right. Well, one thing that this makes me think of, and we can actually start walking toward Walnut Street as we talk. One of the things this makes me think of is Jane Jacobs' Eyes on the Street idea, where it really connects to the political question of Who's public space here are we talking about?
Maybe you should go back and explain the Eyes on the Street.
Right. The Eyes on the Street idea comes out of Jane Jacobs' book, The Death and Life of Great American Cities, and it's the idea that when you have neighborhoods and spaces in which there are lots of windows looking out onto public space, onto the streets, you actually get people taking care of their neighborhood more, because the people who are looking out onto the street are able to sort of watch, okay, what's going on out there? You know, is something happening that shouldn't be happening? Or, you know, just in terms of safety and in terms of Jacobs gives an example where she's like standing outside of what she thinks is a bus stop and it has moved, and but all of a sudden a person opens a third-story window and yells at her, hey, like, the bus stop's no longer there. You got to go around the corner and down the street and so on and so forth. So there's just a sense on Water Street that I get where there's, because there are very few windows actually on the street. Right.
Yeah. It's wave to the people who never get to... I actually sometimes as I walk down, because I do use Water Street, and I use it because... to get from Schnucks home, it's a much safer route than the other alternatives I have. So I walk or bike down this, and I've oftentimes seen little messages that prisoners were in front of the sheriff's building. And so there are these little slitty windows, and you can actually see people holding little messages up to the windows sometimes, especially on Water Street. I've seen little messages taped to the side. So those are like pretty much where we're now. Are we on Walnut?
Walnut.
That the only eyes on the street are people who are in confinement. And we have a really horrible tradition here of having people wear the striped, like, jail bird outfits and oftentimes with shackles on their street, on their feet. And then we're about to approach Main Street, and oftentimes, because I work downtown, I see people being transferred from the sheriff's department to the county courthouse, and they're in these jailbird outfits with shackles on their feet, kind of shuffling across Main Street. And so you really get a sense in this part of downtown, which is the kind of western part, that it's dominated by the criminal justice system.
Eastern part.
Eastern part of downtown, that it's dominated by the criminal justice system, and that you really have lots of prison kind of related, criminal justice related uses.
That's interesting to think about, because it creates a very different type of community atmosphere. I mean, you would be thinking twice about sending your kid walking down here, you know, as opposed to just having them hang out on Main Street. But it's you know, it's a much simpler idea that the people, the eyes on the street, than that. It's when people are there and they have they're residing there, they have a business there, they take ownership of the space, they take pride in the space. And it's not something that's just the frou-frou concept. It's, you know, studied, it's been proven. It's a concept that when you have people there and they take ownership of it, it goes beyond that, and it's the security. It's the people feeling it's okay to have my kids sit around and play outside and stuff. But it's almost like a detachment when you have this anchoring one end of downtown from Schnucks, you know, that has been called, I've heard people call it, the community grocery store, which is interesting to think about, because it's if you think of community grocery store, you think of maybe Sunshine Grocery on the corner of Race and Washington, not Schnucks, but people consider it to be that, especially when you see them walking back and forth with the bags. Yeah.
I mean, very few downtowns have a grocery store in their downtown. There's just not space for it. And in our case, it's not very well integrated into our downtown, but in terms of proximity, it's there.
I think we were talking about whether or not this useful corridor past the Civic Center. And I was just looking around, and I noticed that in every single access direction on these roads, the major crossroad doesn't have a crosswalk or a stop sign or any kind of stoplight there. So it's very difficult for pedestrians to get onto that very useful throughway. You know, I mean, if you want to walk from Schnucks across, it's great to be on this road, but it's hard to cross Vine, and it's hard to cross Broadway, and it's hard to cross Main up here. So I think that's another thing that has to be taken into account. Is this is it's a useful building in a really useless place. It's got no eyes on the street. It's got no convenience for pedestrian access. Inside, the acoustics are horrible there, so there's a lot of things you can't do. You can't jam a lot of people in there. It gets too noisy.
Given our current leadership, who, even though interest rates are all-time low, there's a reluctance to go into any debt. Urbana's a debt-free city. That's kind of a weird thing. Cities usually use debt to invest in things like that, and we don't currently do that. And you know, there's good and bad to that. But one of the things first of all, we had consultants from Chicago come to Urbana and tell us we have too much parking. Well, we knew that already, but it was nice to have consultants, you know, come and say, okay, look, you really do have too much parking. So because of that, the city leadership has been a little more open to reuse of parking lots. So for example, well, actually, it wasn't a parking lot before. It was Stratford, and we're looking at developing something on Race Street. We're looking at, you know, potential outlot development in Lincoln Square. We're looking at some development across the street from Lincoln Square on Illinois, development on Vine Street next to the city. There's a city lot. A lot of the lots in downtown are city-owned, which is a good thing in terms of control and being able to make things happen. And I, you know, I agree with you completely. And this is the, this has been like my mantra. I was in Princeton, New Jersey, and I was taking a tour with the mayor and first lady of New Jersey, who are the sweetest people in the whole entire universe. It's totally amazing human beings. And they, and it was a one person tour because I was the only one to show up to actually walk with the mayor and first lady of Princeton and do this tour. Well, as we walked through the downtown, I said, where's the parking? I mean, it was just wall to wall, you know, zero lot line kind of beautiful structures everywhere with lots of mixed use. And they said, you see that little light between those two buildings? All the parking is in the center of every block is a parking garage that actually accesses. And so people, there's like a little kind of hole that they go in and then the cars disappear, which is what I like to see. Cars disappear. You don't see them anymore. And so they had this beautiful, totally walkable space right near the university, which is also their downtown. And I became inspired after I saw it in action and came back and kept pushing for it. So we've talked about adding to the current deck, which it can handle, and that might be an option. We've talked about maybe doing a deck down here and then being able to sell off all the property, because our northern part of our downtown is really just parking lots. And so, and a lot of people, I don't think people understand this, but when, you know, when people say, why don't we have more activity in downtown? My answer to that is we have one of the lowest vacancy rates of any downtowns. I mean, you can't find property in downtown unless it's Lincoln Square Mall. Yeah. And because people think, see Lincoln Square Mall is available, they think we have all this vacancy. And it's not true. Office rates are really high in downtown. It's really hard to find space. Businesses try to open up all the time, and they don't have space to open up.
People want to move down here.
Exactly, and that we should build buildings. And really, as we walk, and I know George knows a lot about this, but the history of downtown Urbana is a history of fires. It's a history of fires destroying major buildings, and it's a history of Busey knocking down two blocks and the courthouse knocking down a bunch of stuff. And between demolitions and fires, we've lost a lot of our kind of private infrastructure that can be used for these things.
Yeah, why don't we keep walking up towards Main Street? Yeah, like Daniel just mentioned, the area that we're walking now used to be very similar to the area that's between Race and Broadway, where there were buildings lining the streets. There was a right to our right, immediate right, there was a Montgomery Ward's store that I believe, if I'm correct, George, extended from Main Street all the way back down to Water.
They had an addition that was built about the late 50s, early 60s. Made it go all the way back, but right here was a small parking lot. It said the little Gap Parts Auto Supply store in the street. Small George Roney's White Spot Lunch Diner. Then just west of the Montgomery Wards was Smith Drugs, and then the Champaign County Bank and Trust. They tore that down and built the Crescent structure.
Okay.
And behind that was like a knee-high RC bottling plant on the northwest corner of this block.
Huh. Okay. But
it's interesting to think about this space right here and this axis again. What comes to mind directly when I'm looking at this is the strip along University or Springfield on campus that's narrowed very small to one lane so pedestrians can walk between the engineering campus. And it just seems like this is it, but I know that there's traffic that has to go through, but I'm wondering, you know, what standards. I've done a lot of research on traffic standards and traffic engineering, and the standards they use a lot of the time in the federal government and locally are the ones that were printed in 1956, which is kind of ironic, but I know...
The car-loving time of our...
And the reasoning that they had for doing those standards back then, a lot of the reasons no longer hold.
Can you name some of those reasons?
Well, just like the speed of cars and needing to get cars through and the width of lanes for safety and just things like that.
The whole concept of bringing maximum numbers of cars through downtown and having the parking structure in the center of downtown, it seems like I like what campus is doing, which is to make it aggressively difficult for cars to be in the core. but to encourage you to park in the outskirts of the core and then have lots of transportation options to get you into the core, you know? So if there was going to be a city parking garage, to have it over there somewhere and have buses or shuttles.
Not necessarily a bad thing to have the parking garage in downtown. I mean, there's elderly people that need to have parking right there. You're never going to get rid of the cars, as much as I hate to admit it.
We shouldn't have the state highway or the county, whatever this highway is, you know, right through the...
highway through downtown. The highway goes along University Avenue, and then it drops down to Springfield, Wright Street, between down to Springfield, and then it goes to Prospect, Champaign, back up to I-74 and Bloomington Road. And of course, Neal Street's a US 45 from Springfield Avenue southward.
My vision, in terms of what Genevieve was talking about, my vision for Vine to Ray Street is two lanes herringbone parking the entire way, and redevelopment of this building off to our right, which is the Health Alliance building, which is, I think, ripe for redevelopment. It's not a good use of space. I mean, there's the one building, but there's a lot of surface parking, and really there's a potential investment here that could, I think, really pay off for the person who invests. And then the vision would then be, once we get to Ray Street, so we have herringbone parking all along the way, so it's a lot more pedestrian friendly, and then the
distance of car space to cross.
Exactly, easier for people to jump across. And also, we've heard from little shops like Mirabelle and Heel to Toe, which is just one block down the way here, that they don't have enough parking right in front of their space. It's not that they need much more than what they have the deck, but in terms of quick in and out, I think herringbone would support retail. But then once we hit Ray Street, to actually start instead of having herringbone parking continue, that lane that was taken out on the north side to actually become a city parklet, like a little mini park that goes all the way down, includes the little ham hock triangle in the middle with the tree, and then actually gets rid of that dangerous cut where people, I'm sure, have been hit and will be hit in the future, where there's kind of this a wishbone look. And so then you have a park area there where there can be seating and things like that. So I really think this whole thing, without a whole lot of investment,
yeah,
in terms of dollars, we're not talking about much more than painting the street and adding some dirt in one area and some curbage. It's a small amount, but the barrier has been that we've heard that it will cause all kinds of bottlenecks in terms of traffic. But I don't necessarily agree.
Yeah, it would help pedestrians and cars activate the space more. And the critique usually of doing this sort of thing is it's just for the pedestrians, you know? But at the same time, by giving cars more parking space, you're accommodating both of them. But, like, look at the space right now. We're looking at the underside of cars walking along here. That's not very pleasant, even though there's a fence here.
There's that car, the cooling unit right here.
Yeah, can we talk a little bit about this space, this Busey Center space? There, right, because can't have heavy trucks going onto this deck, otherwise it will collapse.
It's also visually significant, I think, because it's pedestrians go there. It's a preventative measure. It's something to close it off.
Yeah. And we're here in the middle of the day on Monday. What time is it? It's like 12:30 or 1. And here's surface parking, but about a third of it is used.
Yeah.
So we have this massive expenditure of surface parking, and there's not really a good use of it, and it's visually, it's not integrated at all within the downtown. And I know the owner of this building is a new owner, and he has, shown some interest in really working with the city to develop something different here, to expand and add and, accommodate parking. And one of the things would be that the city could perhaps provide more municipal parking, and then they can redevelop the space for business uses, commercial uses. And I think that would be really positive, especially if it was more integrated.
It's interesting that you're talking visually. The scale of this building and the exterior is something you would expect to see in suburban Chicago.
Yeah.
Not downtown.
It looks like suburban Chicago.
There's appropriate architecture for every urban space. And the transect, something Emily Talon has done a lot of studies, she's a professor in urban planning. The whole idea is there's appropriate places for appropriate things, and it's a proven formula, and people feel comfortable, cars feel comfortable where they're supposed to, but by intermixing the two, you get sort of this juxtaposed mishmash of just stuff that doesn't work for both, then.
It So why is this building out of space, out of place? Like, what's going on with it?
For pedestrians, you visually look at the space and it's very impermeable. You were talking about the eyes in the street earlier, and it's the watching people on the inside makes it much more comfortable for people on the outside. Earlier we were talking about public versus private space. Well, there's a semi-public and semi-private realm that should be between the two, allowing for people to feel more comfortable. It's the barrier. It's the private should be private and the public should be public, but it's the allowing the two to sort of bleed into each other in a way that makes it more comfortable for both. And also by you not being able to see in there, you're thinking it's very, you know, foreboding. And it's just, when you're looking at that space, all you can see is the exterior. There's nothing for you.
It's the Death Star.
Exactly. There's nothing for you to think about on the inside. There's nothing for you to wonder about. And as a result, a lot of people, I think, when they walk by a blank wall or a building like this, all they can think about is their own thoughts. And when you want to be in public, you want to be in public. You don't want to be walking down a narrow hallway. I mean, that's for inside apartment buildings. And the great thing about the public realm and about what our downtown Main Street is that people, it's active. You're in public. You're celebrating urban community life. And this is just sort of the opposite of that in a way.
Yeah, well, one thing, we could keep walking a little bit. Maybe someone could pick up Danielle's bag. one thing is that, talking before, and what I was trying to lay out before at the beginning of the tour is the idea of different patterns that you notice in spaces. The pattern in this general area, right, is very small, shallow setbacks, where the buildings come right up to the street, and then all of a sudden you expect more of that on this part of the street, and instead you get this humongous setback. The building is like at least a story or two taller than all the other buildings around it, except for the courthouse. And so you sort of end up feeling like, oh gosh, what did I move into? All of a sudden I left this like sort of enclosed realm of the public, you know.
This is the scale. We're looking at the bottoms of cars.
I moved here in 1995, and I think this might be the third time I've walked where we are right now.
Yeah.
Because there's no reason for me to come here. I do want to make a comment. If we just compare the county courthouse with this space, if you look at the county courthouse, it's similar. It's got somewhat of a setback. It architecturally, it tries to integrate more with the streetscape, and it provides a public plaza.
15 people over there, 0 here.
I do want to make a comment that to kind of illuminate something. And so sometimes people like to look just in terms of how things look and the massing of things and where they're positioned. And I feel like use and rules and terms of use and the way things are used is just as important, if not more important, because you have this nice, well-integrated facade. Don't get me started about the parking lot, but at least this area, integrated facade, it is a prison in many ways. It is part of the prison industrial complex. It is kind of, it does take over the public square.
It's
architecturally, I think it's well done. Now, I do want to say, if we went over there and we sat down, well, we're white, so it might be easier for us. But if we were black and we all went across the street and started talking and hanging out there, I can guarantee you that the sheriff would come out and ask us to leave. They're very concerned. This is a public space, but because the courthouse has received a number of bomb threats, I think 8 in the last 2 years, and so they do have good reason to be concerned, that space is really not usable. So this was supposed to be, our public square has turned into a space where you can go smoke a cigarette, you can hang outside and, you know, wait to go into, you know, for your hearing.
Wait to go to prison.
And there's a bunch of signs that are really badly placed that say, know our firearms, and know this, and know that, and you have to do this, and you have to do that right outside. And you really can't hang out there. I know people who have tried to hang out on that space and use it as an outdoor mini park, and they've been asked to leave. So our public dollars invested in this really nice, fairly unusable space for human beings, even though it looks nice. And so terms of use and the way things are used and the way the policies around that really is important. I would say that's not very well used, just like this isn't very well used, even though it looks better. And architecturally, the architects can, you know, pat themselves on the back because they did a good job.
Now, I have a quick question for you, Danielle. that's pertaining to this whole idea of community and public space and stuff, we're kind of on one of the corners of the public square that we were talking about, sort of, at the moment, right? We're
right
near
across
it.
Across the street from it.
Okay. So this is sort of the pseudo epicenter of downtown. What would need to happen to activate something on this space to make it more public? Like, for instance, what if you were to show movies on the side of the white building over there? Like, what would it take? Permits? Would it take community groups to get involved? Would it take local residents asking the city council? What?
I think it's people taking the initiative to make it happen, because I know that they have the support for those kinds of things on council and with the city. I actually haven't had people come forward asking for very much. I don't see a lot of people. I think people, they accept the world as it is so often, and they don't really, people don't think about what the world can be. And so, you know, if the environment is used in a particular way, they assume that that's the way it's used and they can't use it in any other way. I happen to know that you can get a special permit to have a party in the parking deck. You want to take the parking deck and have a huge party? You can get a special use permit for it. A prompting theater already did. You know, if you wanted to show a video on the side of the wall, you could. I mean, I think that these things are possible. It's just that we don't, I don't
how
really
do you,
see people
how do local
it.
Residents learn about these permits? Like, what's the best route for them to do? Is it best to talk to the planning department first? Or who is the person, you know, that would help them, guide them to find out what paperwork they would need, that sort of thing, to activate the space?
Well, most people, you can just walk in City Hall and say, I'd like a special use permit for X, an event, a parade, a blah, 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 closing of the street. And there's a form you fill out, and that form has to go through every department in the city, because fire needs to make sure there aren't fire hazards, and public works needs to make sure the traffic can get through and everything. But it goes through all the departments, and then they raise concerns, and then the person who has the permit tries to address the concerns.
Okay.
So, you know, I've put myself forward. I know Laura Huth and other council members have put themselves forward as people who would advocate with residents to make things like that happen. I do think that we have that issue, but we also have the issue of not having a public space. And the we'll go around the corner, but downtown consultants talked about having a public space right outside of the post office. What's interesting is our public space, this right behind us, the courthouse, is where Native Americans gathered. This has been public space. This has been the gathering ground for many, many generations and for centuries. And Native Americans, before there were even European settlers in the area, this is where they traded things. It was a little bit of a high spot. You can actually look. It dips down that way, and it dips down this way, and it's a little bit of a high spot in what was generally a marshy area, and this was a trading post. But the courthouse has really kind of taken over the space, and it's no longer a gathering space because of the bomb threats, as well as the size of the courthouse.
Well, the size of the courthouse, and then also what I'm seeing here is because of the size of the street and the fact that half of the public square has been obliterated.
But you can't gather there because the sheriff will come out and
right. No, I'm saying.
So, I mean, really,
what I'm saying is that they're in a public square. I mean, the way that it works, right, is that generally traffic slows down in a public square because you end up having on the all four sides there's like sort of a wall around you of buildings. And so you end up
an outdoor room,
basically, right? So you end up where traffic is slowing down. There's more opportunities than to generally slow yourself down. And you know, before 1901, which is when this part of the courthouse, the older part of the courthouse, was erected, there was a smaller building there. So you actually had the opportunity to gather on a green space. On the city square.
There are also more bomb threats. I mean, I think that there's really, I have to underline this. Even if we narrowed the street, even if there were herringbone parking, even if it slowed down, this is really no longer usable space. Uh-huh. And I don't have a lot of hope for it being usable space in the future for the public.
Uh-huh.
And I don't because of the way things have changed, the way that we have this really intense class war going on in this country. And until that class war ends, it doesn't matter how much engineering, architecture, fancy-dancy design, urban planning, I don't care. It's a class war that results in this not being usable space. And it's not going to be usable space. And so I don't really have a lot of hope for it. But this does, and over there does, and we can talk about the other places. But I just, sometimes people think that if they can just change the physical stuff, because that's the easy stuff, then they don't have to deal with the social relations. They'll come. But the social relations comes first with this. I don't think it's the space.
Church was talking about the fact that they're fundraising, taking private donations to rebuild the tower of the courthouse. She thought that there are a lot of other more pressing social issues, even though, you know, it's by voluntary contributions rather than tax dollars to restore the tower. But what's the general feeling on that?
I don't think we need a larger phallic structure in our downtown, and I think that it would be a waste of taxpayer dollars to pursue that. I think it's big, you know, we want the bigger, taller thing, and it's like, look, there are so many places I want to spend that money that would really do good for human beings, and I don't think restoring the size of the tower so it can be zapped by lightning in the future is a worthy cause.
You know, now that we're standing at this corner, we were talking about the parking garage earlier, the idea of redoing parking in downtown. What would be the possibility of somehow putting retail or activating the ground floor of this so that it would bring Lincolnscore Mall closer to the downtown and moving the parking up if you were going to redo the parking anyways? I mean, would that...
I am all for it. That's exactly... If we added to the parking, we could add another two levels and make the bottom level retail. The one thing is it was built for that, and then we found out that actually it won't cost any less to go in and fill in. So we thought
really?
We were... Yeah, we thought the... It was built so that you could do that, and so that you, so these are like super load-bearing walls.
Yeah.
Like, this is only two levels, but it's super load-bearing. It could go up another two levels.
So it's like instant.
But the infill
refurbished.
Yeah, but the infill space down here, which I agree with completely. I mean, even if it was just a strip along here, and you still had some parking, kind of in
the
back.
Question is, it's city owned, so you know, like then you have the whole private public thing again. You need a private developer probably to redo it. But, you know, how would that relationship work?
Well, the university, there's a lot of ways, and, you know, it's a little sticky, but the university is in the business right now of developing commercial property on its property, retaining control of the property, but leasing it out.
Oh, parking garage, for example.
Well, actually, the East Campus Commercial District, the one where the Gregory Place used to be, that is on university property, but it's private development, and the university actually does a payment in lieu of taxes to the city because they're using it for commercial uses. So there could be something similar here. I don't think that we can sell off the deck because it'll never be a money maker for anyone.
Right.
We lose money every year on this deck.
Right. Well, they do that.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Why don't we keep moving and move along and then cross the street? One of the things that Danielle mentioned was the fact that this spot was a Native American gathering place, cross safely and then I'll keep talking. So one of the things that was interesting finding in the archives was mention on the very earliest platting documents of the town of Urbana was that area, any unoccupied space in this area was covered with grapes, wild grapes.
No way.
Wild plums and hazel, which if we take it to mean both American hazelnut, which is a sort of native nut tree, and witch hazel, which is a small low-growing tree that provides lots of medicinal uses. This area had food for all seasons. Okay, it was four-season food, basically. You had grapes in the spring, you had plums coming in the summer, you had in the fall, the nuts and the grapes were coming, would come into so you ended up having food for all four seasons of the year. So one of the things that I look at whenever I look at public spaces is what are the non-human members of our community doing? I mean, like, basically you look here and you have some hemlock, you have a maple tree, and which no one taps, you know, for sap. One of the really amazing projects that I'm hoping to see happen in Urbana is we have these age-old, like, you know, 60, 70-year-old maple trees. it would be amazing to have a community project of just going around town and tapping the maple trees, you know, as a community sort of service. So I would propose, and I wonder what. Of Portland in Oregon, or when I was in the Bay Area in Seattle, all the West Coast cities, I was basically getting free lunch. You know, every day I would just walk out, grab an apricot off a tree, grab some blackberries. You know, I mean, by the time that I walked to where I was going, I had eaten enough for my lunch. So I'm really interested in seeing how can we incorporate sort of edible landscaping into the way that we do our public spaces. I'm interested in any feedback you have on that, but why don't we keep walking?
No, before we leave this corner, though, I want to talk one more time about surfaces, because this is a really good example about the articulation of surfaces and scale. If you look at the repetition of the entrances into the buildings along Main Street here, it's a lot more permeable, again, for pedestrians, and it's more regular, and there's a cadence when you're walking along, instead of car speed and car architecture, which is which is more this. It's designed to have one glance at it when you're moving 35 miles an hour or 25 or whatever you're going. And it's different things like the articulation of brick on sidewalks that makes it, again, more pedestrian friendly, but it still works in the streets for cars to go over. So it's different surfaces and different ways to articulate surfaces that signify, you know, that it's both a place for cars and a place for pedestrians, which is key to downtown survival.
I have a comment about the tapping of trees. One problem that might be, it might bring back some bad memories of the 50s when Urbana was severely hard hit by Dutch elm disease, and the trees were weakened by two other diseases, phloem necrosis and wet. There was a pressure and a fluid made of decaying plant material built up inside. So they did have to put taps on those trees to release the fluid, but there were no buckets under that tap. That fluid dripped out, saying the pipe smelled like an old tennis shoe or cow manure or whatever. It was very nauseous. And then, of course, the trees soon died, and they were cutting down. One disaster that occurred after the elm trees died was they planted all the locusts on the quad because they used all one species of tree. Those two succumbed to various insect diseases, and they were wiped out, and they had to plant more trees, you know, different kinds. But it might bring back too many memories of the smelly fluid coming out of the trees. It may be certain if we tap, but it, the idea sounds. I remember they used to have maple sugar fair out at Homer Lake, but they've discontinued that now.
One more thing as we're walking about downtown is there's a different style of development than there used to be 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago. If you look behind us, there's the one building on the end here that has the same rooftop lining, the same, I'm blanking all of a sudden. No, the thing on the top.
Cornice.
Thank you. Yeah. And it's one cornice, one style, but the brick is different on each facade. Yeah. And that would mean... It would mean an entirely different level of developing than is done right now. You have, you know, people willing to build right up next to somebody else. I mean, it's done, but with all the permits and setbacks and way, you know, things are installed now and structure and materials used to build, it's a lot different ballgame.
Although it's also a question, and we can actually, I was going to do it on the back side of the courthouse. If you look at the courthouse, the new addition to the courthouse, it does look architecturally similar. And yet the materials, you can tell that the materials are of not a high a quality.
Yeah.
And one of the comments, one of the sort of ways of talking about what do we invest in when we're investing in buildings? Are we going to invest vertically, you know, the things that you're talking about, like an ornate cornice, you know, sort of like beautiful buildings, or are we going to invest horizontally? Which is sort of looking at ways of, like, expanding out from the city center.
There's more to it than that, though. It's not just vertical versus horizontal. Uh-huh. It's the fact that the facade of a building is responsible to the public realm and vice versa. They complement each other, and that's what makes it a system. That's what's community design. That's what a downtown's about, not about the separation of the two.
I wanted to make a comment because we're on Broadway. just between the parking deck and the courthouse. And what I find so interesting about this place right here is that this is the transportation center for downtown Urbana. This is where the buses come and drop off and pick up people. And you'll notice that there are very few goods and services right immediately as people get off the buses. You basically have parking and then a pretty impermeable wall, not in terms of windows, but the entrance isn't on this side of the courthouse. And so what you have is a lot of people. I mean, if you want to know where people are in downtown Urbana, like where the bodies are, they're right here getting on and off the buses, and they're in the library. And then, you know, those are like the concentrations of people are these areas. And I don't feel like around the library, the goal is to, you know, and I'm talking to the library board about this, they just want to take over the whole block. And I'm like, wait a minute, can we say mixed use? Like, maybe the library should have a cafe and a little, you know, auxiliary commercial uses right around the library. Not that the library owns it, but that there be private development right where people go to go to the library, and they can use that. Same thing around here with Genevieve's idea of having, at least on this face, some commercial areas in this, and it's kind of well suited for that. It could be these little stalls. And so when you get off, there's a donut shop. You need like a coffee shop or a donut shop or someplace to get your newspaper or things right here. And right now I think that when you get off in downtown Urbana on the transit, you don't even know where you are. Because look, what says Urbana to you? Do you see the banners aren't up on this street because it's considered a side street. There's nothing, the MTD stops, this one doesn't even have a shelter, that one does.
We're not here though, because it is a side street, but it's where people get off.
Yeah. But the shelters don't even have a map. Like, welcome to Urbana. Like, here's where you go to find things. Because, and I've talked to MTD about this, and they actually have scheduled to do a new stop right here, and I'm working with them, and I can't tell if I've gotten a hook in their mouth yet or not, but I'm working with them to do an artful Urbana, like, site-specific MTD stop that really lets you know, I just got off in downtown Urbana, and this is where I'm going to go now.
Two cities that have done redevelopment that have been really interesting, incorporating a lot of what you're talking about, are Glendale, California, and Pasadena. They have both sort of redone their downtowns without the straight-on parking, but that parallel parking down the center, where the diagonal herringbone parking. And Pasadena has taken large structures like this, created lots of little shops with walkways in between, so they virtually double the square footage in terms of stores. So not only do they have stores on the outside, but you can walk into it and meander around, and you have stores on the inside as well. And it makes for a wonderful walking experience.
I'm going to go back to Danielle's point about the mixed use. It's important to remember the entire premise for city planning and the legal backing of this idea of protecting citizens' rights and the community's rights negates the way it grew, this whole idea of mixing things. We, from the start, were so concerned with protecting the rights of people and the community that we started separating things. We started listing things off just so we could grapple this whole big idea of protecting rights. And in the process, we had to put this over here, analyze it, understand what made it okay, put this over here, you know, separate things. And that's why our city codes right now, not just city codes, but, you know, all across the country, it's really hard to get development money to do that kind of thing. You know, it's a whole new ballgame of relationships. It's not as easy as it used to be 100 years ago, just put a coffee shop in the library or something like that. But it's something that needs to happen.
Yeah. Although we actually have a place where you can, with the new library, where you'll be able to order books. So there's like a little bit of a book ordering function. The other thing, though, I want to point out in downtown, and this is, again, going back to social relations, because I don't like the fetishization of structures and design, although I'm a designer, but I think that we have to look at social relations. So one of the things that we can look at is, I'm a new family, or I'm a young entrepreneur, or I know how to cook really good soul food. I want to open my own business. Now, if you have really old, high rent, fairly large spaces as your only available spaces, then you can't really get a business off the ground. And so when you look at redevelopment of something like the parking deck, having smaller stalls, really tiny spaces, shared kitchens, like things that allow people who are just getting off the ground in terms of a business to get some economic independence and some footing and then grow from there. And so I think that one of the things our downtown doesn't really provide people is it doesn't provide budding entrepreneurs with the ability to get off the ground in this location. Because it's just too expensive and the spaces are too big.
And the example I gave in Pasadena, all those stores and those kinds of things are very small.
Yep.
About 400 square feet, sometimes 500 square feet.
That's great. And I think that's what's needed. And that's, in many ways, we live in an extremely segregated town where African Americans have very few economic opportunities in this town. They do not go to the university here. They do not, generally speaking, they do not have access to the same resources. And I think one of my goals moving forward is to try to establish economic opportunities for African Americans and generally like lower middle class folks who can then start their own businesses and gain some independence and foothold. And we have to provide structures and places that foster that kind of business incubation, small business incubation.
Well, let's take a look at this corner where we're standing. This is a really interesting corner. Excuse me. When I was looking at different pictures of this corner from losing my voice, looking at the different pictures from the 40s and 50s of this corner, this was actually the center of town. You had, across the street where the parking deck is now, you had the city building, okay, right on this corner, and then you had several retail shops sort of going along down there where the parking lot is for the mall or the hotel is now, and then you had the post office, the civic building, and you had the courthouse, the back corner of the courthouse. So this square now is sort of what was the center of town. Now, and Genevieve, you talked about possibly looking at the ways that the library and the post office are in some way related spatially. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
I was involved in a student studio last fall. The planning students examined the mall space in the downtown area right around it, and they recognized in their research that an architect, the first architect to ever graduate in the entire country, Nathan Ricker, graduated from the U of I, and one of his students built both this building, the post office, and the library. And they're actually on axes, and they use a lot of the same architecture, so it's significant going right through the center of what was downtown in the 40s and the 50s. But the students recognized that kind of impeding on that axis was the addition to the hotel. And they sort of recognized that something could be done with the parking lot to tie that back together, but their idea was to put an English garden to look, you know, to give a nod to the architecture style of the building and put the market there. But, you know, it's all ideas, and it's just a question of starting some sort of synergy and getting the right people who have the right money to do the right things.
Well, I wonder, and I haven't looked at traffic reports, but I've really looked at Elm Street, which is right here, as an opportunity, as a space that maybe could become a pedestrian-only zone. And by creating a pedestrian-only zone, actually create a center, a square right here, or to have controlled access. And the main issue is the buses. They would need to have some access, but...
A good example of sharing pedestrian access with transit, Denver, Colorado. I went to the American Planning Association conference last year, and they have their new pedestrian mall that's redone, and trams actually go down the middle of it, and buses. And it's amazing because there's beeping, and you get out of the way, and it's fine. They go at a slower pace, yeah. But then when they're gone, you just have people walking back.
I think that would be perfect for this area because actually cars don't use this venue. I mean, I was talking about from the where the entrance of the parking deck starts, like cut it off there all the way down, because they don't really use this space, even if it was just until like here, you know, and you allowed access here and there, but just this little four corner thing here, because we've talked about actually making this the public square. You know, in the downtown plan, which was something developed over the course of a year and a half or so, it's in front of the post office and Lincoln Square, where there's opportunities for maybe an outdoor performance venue and more of a public square. And if we traffic calmed in this whole area and just allowed buses in this one little, whatever, intersection here, then it would really create that pedestrian-friendly space. And then if there were commercial that served the bus terminal area, then you would have more synergies in that space. And with the redevelopment of the post office.
Actually, you know, I don't know. I think that actually we're at a place where I would feel comfortable stopping. It's sort of been about an hour and a half, I think, right? And so we plan to go to Vine Street and then talk a little bit about the parking lot there. And so maybe we could just talk about that for just a couple minutes standing here. The city owns the parking lot that's outside of Lincoln Square. And so I've heard numbers of different ideas on what could happen to that space. So maybe you could just name a couple of them and talk about, we'll sort of end on that note.
Well, Genevieve's group had, I learned a lot from that design iteration that you all did, because one, I didn't know about the connection here between the library and the post office, but also the concept of actually extending Lincoln Square out and kind of with buildings on either side and kind of making that what is now like an entrance to the parking lot into a street really is very intriguing to me. And given that the city owns the parking lot of Lincoln Square, which I think is a really important piece, and Lincoln Square itself is privately owned, the city has a lot of flexibility in terms of what it does. And one of the things that I'm in the process of cheerleading for, and again, you know, I think people don't quite understand the effort that it takes to do these kinds of things. They're like, Danielle, why don't you just do this? And it's like, okay, if you could just follow me around for a couple of months, you would see how many times, like all the different ways in which I tried to do this. And,
you know. A magic wand.
If I was the queen of Urbana and this was a monarchy, I could get a lot more done than the way it is now. But so outlot development on the parking lot of Lincoln Square, I think it's an absolute must. I just feel like, and I've talked to the owner of Lincoln Square and he's open to the concept, and we're in the initial stages of talking about doing buildings on the corner so that it's not this sea of parking, but it's broken up by some of the buildings. Actually, there used to be outlots there, and they were various stores that people remember fondly. And what was the name of the store that was?
Well, that was the Eisner and Jewel and Diana store. That was just that one since Lincoln Square was built. They tore down all the, before Lincoln Square, like filling station. There's a Bill Coupette shop right about here, and the Bill Montgomery Ward Farm store right about just west of the federal courthouse, and there were filling stations on the corners, and all kinds. And there's some houses along Vine Street, just south across from the city building, and where the city building now is, and all that was all residential on that side. The filling station where the parking lot there, green, and where the post office used to park their mail trucks and such.
So it's more about variety, I think. There was a lot more different kinds of uses. With
to fail and be able to sustain itself.
We just, you know, downtown Urbana lacks infrastructure, and what we need is for people to come invest in developing infrastructure. The city and the county have actually invested tens of millions of dollars in infrastructure, and it's really time for the private sector to pony up and start working with us to develop some more commercial development.
Now, there's an interesting story that I want to share with people about Lincoln Square Mall. I think I told you the other day, but the person who designed it was the second indoor mall built in America, but the person who designed it, Victor Gruen, was actually from Vienna, Austria, and I read an article about how when he came over from Austria to the United States, it was during the 50s when people started moving to the outskirts of cities, and he's like, no, you have to appreciate your downtown, you know? So he started designing these malls because you could use the steel, the infrastructure. You'd have escalators, elevators, air conditioning to make this whole structure happen. So we came up with, you need to have a city downtown where people can leave their car and still come and have it be a special meeting place. And so we came up with this whole idea of the indoor mall, but as he kept building them, and this idea, instead of being in the center of the city, moved to the outskirts of the city because it was cheaper and more economically feasible for developers to do. They got way ahead of the game than the original idea. The developers have figured out mall design and consumerism so well. We are so pegged. But basically, he moved up to Canada. And after living in Canada, he got so disenchanted with the way things were developing, he moved back to Vienna. And he went back to his old neighborhood, and it was wiped out by a mall. He died a very sad person. When it all comes back to downtown Urbana.
Although there are interesting examples, and Genevieve and I talked the other day about this, so there are interesting examples of malls where the hallway spaces are actually public spaces. So they act as indoor public spaces.
They're publicly owned.
Publicly owned spaces.
A really, really good example of it that is easy to research is the Galleria in Milan. And it's the street is a public pedestrian way. And basically what it is the street is, the space is publicly owned, but the buildings and the archway are privately owned. And it's a beautifully ornate space, but that's Europe. And I understand that that's Europe and we're the United States, but it's an idea. You can have a public space in the middle, like a street, publicly owned, but have it be a mall, you know?
I wonder if then the city would have to maintain, I guess it would have to maintain the surface. Because what's so interesting about that is that, you know, with the future of Lincoln Square Mall, and we're not exactly sure what that future is, but there are, now that Berkner's is out, there are a lot of possibilities and some exciting plans in the works. But I think that one of the things that I keep wrestling with is if the city, through its TIF, invests in redevelopment, which may be something we look at in the future and I would be very supportive of, I want to preserve some... I hadn't heard that before, so I know that if there is some public gathering space, maybe we can make that public gathering space either publicly owned or in the development agreement with Lincoln Square Mall, make sure that that free speech rights are protected. That basically
operated but privately owned.
Yeah, it would be that there are certain, basically the same rights that people have in public spaces would be in private spaces, in the gathering spaces and corridors of the mall.
The most special places are where a relationship is built with the private sector and the public sector. Paley Park in New York City, I'll just say this quickly and you talk. But Paley Park in New York City is a very famous example. It's privately owned, privately maintained. It's a public park in Manhattan. But it's a beautifully public space. It's free speech all the way. It's gorgeous. People just go and sit there. The whole back wall is a huge water wall. There's these canopy trees with light filtering through. And, you know, that's obviously a way opposite example, but it just shows that when you have such a relationship, it can work. It's just harder to foster.
Santa Monica, California, took 3rd Street from the end of a mall down to Arizona and completely blocked it off. And it's completely pedestrian. All of the shops along the sides and restaurants and activities and movie theaters are all privately owned. And I'm not sure how the city is dealing with the street part, but it's all trees, walkway, places to sit. Musicians come, jugglers come. There's a whole life that goes on there that's pretty unique.
It's important when you do that, you have to have the critical mass of people. And in Champaign, it failed, if I remember correctly. They closed off Neal Street and it just didn't work. So in order for it to work, you have to examine the social aspects, as you were talking about. Give people a destination point. Figure out how they can still use their cars and still use it so it's not a disengaged thing.
They have set up a series of public parking structures where you give free 3-hour parking, 4-hour parking that you don't have to pay for at all, which is plenty of time to go to a movie, to go to shopping, to go to a restaurant, and then you can leave. And if you want to stay longer than that, then you pay $1 an hour or something. It's more in Santa Monica because it's Santa Monica, but...
That's one of the retail without having people park there for their business uses, like, you know, to go to work.
Makes sense. And it's just one, maybe 3 or 4 block length, so there's still plenty of driving in Santa Monica. You're not losing any of that kind of getting around capacity.
I also believe in incremental change where, like, this space over here could be turned into outside of the post office could be turned into a public square performance area without any changes in this. And then as people use it, you begin to see the need. So I oftentimes feel like there's this heuristic to design where you take a step and then people's patterns of doing things change, and then you take another step to support that change.
Well, what's interesting is that you can still have both. You can still have that be a parking lot. You can just mark it differently with pavers, add more plants, you know, design the space differently so that when you want to have a show, it signifies that's a special place. So maybe there could be some sort of relationship done with something like that.
The mini park down here, they're tearing up everything, the little mini park. Is that going to be an outside patio for the Iron Post?
Well, this is a good example of public-private space and I think a good mesh between the two. It's publicly owned, it's mini park. The city is redesigning the whole area. It redesigned it in conjunction with neighboring businesses. Iron Post will have a right-of-way usage license, which they do, so that they can have outdoor seating. And anyone can go sit on that seating. It will be, you don't have to order food. You can, you know, take a load off and sit there. So it will be a public park with seating that can be used by Iron Post. It can be used by the public just to hang out and, you know, get, yeah, read a newspaper or whatever. And so it's going to be really nice in the area. It's being all torn up so that it can, we got rid of the fountains because the fountains really made it less usable space.
Final comments? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.
Thank you.
This has been really great, and I've learned a lot, so thanks.
Thank you.